Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening once again to my brothers and my sisters, and welcome to the PRF table. PRF stands for Possessions, Resources, and Finances, and I am one of the hosts of the show, Brother Dunlap. We have two other hosts that are not with us tonight, which is Brother Feaster, who is getting ready to transition to a new military assignment, and Sister Adia Sanders, as she's recovering from a little minor surgery she had today. So blessings to my co-host, or our co-host today. And tonight we got a very interesting show for you. Tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen, is entitled, you ready for this? Resources in the Black and Brown Community. And if you don't understand how that applies to possessions, resources, and finances, as we introduce our special guest for the day, Brother Christopher J. McWhite, you'll understand in a minute, because when he gets ready to speak about this subject, I think you'll have a very good understanding about why we're here today. So as often as we come together on the PRF table, what we like to do as we start off every show is really talk about how we actually came up with the title for tonight's show. And before I do that, what I want to do is just introduce our guest today, which is Brother Christopher McWhite. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
And we thank you so much, Brother McWhite, for accepting the invitation. And for those of you who have been at the table before, Brother McWhite has also been on the radio with us before. He has been as a guest on a previous show, Living with Diversity, which was on We Speak Radio Network, which is the umbrella that the PRF table actually falls under. And at that time, I was the co-host of Freedom Radio with Kimberly Skeen, and we had a series going on about diversity, and Brother McWhite was gracious to bless us with his presence and his wisdom during that show. So after all this time, since 2012, now we finally got him on the PRF table as a host, as a guest, and we're just so grateful that he's been with us this evening. So let me just tell everybody where we are. The title, as I said, once again, is Resources in the Black Community, Black or Brown Community. And I really want Brother McWhite to come, after I finish introducing him, to be able to just say where this actually came from. For most of us, we all know that today is February the 27th, 2014, and in the month of February, all around the country of the United States, we always have what's called Black History Month. And in Black History Month, when it ends on February the 28th, we seem sometimes not to have some of the things in place that we need to be able to further it. And from a history perspective or a historical perspective, Black History Month did not start off as Black History Month. It actually started off as Black History Week. So what we want to do on this next to the last day of the month, we want to have a discussion, a robust discussion this evening, and talk about what we're going to talk about tonight, resources in the Black and the Brown community. And my hope tonight is that when we leave from the table and at the end of this hour, however long it takes, that everybody who is listening, whether you're listening live right now on Blog Talk Radio, whether you're listening through the archives after the show is over, that you can take something from it and help further your community so that Black History Month is not relegated to just 28 days or 29 days during the month of February, but that we have and been empowered with some information, some wisdom from God, that we can go on and let Black History continue, because Black History is being made every single day on the calendar year. So with that, Brother McWhite, talk to us, my brother. Tell us, where did this central question of what are the resources we have, or conversely, lack in the community, where our Black and our Brown boys can go? So where did that come from? And what I want us to do, after I just drop the mic and give it to you, my brother, is really just for us tonight to just really dissect and just break down that one central question so that our listeners can have a better opportunity to respond in pieces and also that we are educating each other. So, Brother McWhite, the floor is all yours.
Thank you, Brother Dunlap. And I want to take this opportunity to thank you for inviting me back to the table. And I hope that I can offer some type of insight, at least as far as from my perspective. One of the things that I have seen is a great tragedy in America twice over. I wrote about one of the greatest tragedies that happened in America on my personal blog some weeks ago, and tonight I wanted to bring to mind a tragedy that America experienced 2 years ago. 2 years ago, America lost Trayvon Martin, and it was the anniversary of his tragic murder. And I will call it murder, even though there was a decision that the legal system looked at and said that it was something less than that. And, in fact, exonerated the gentleman because of that. The question that I have tonight is the same question that I asked of my church. I said, I have a son, and my primary concern is because he is a black boy, when we have taught my son to respect authority, to respond to them in a way that the authority figures would want us to respond, you know, with respect. When we are presented with a person who in authority, how are we supposed to respond? Well, typically, you know, you do exactly as you're taught in school and as your parents had raised you to. But in the era of stand your ground, all those old responses seem to be up in the air, or at least brought into question. And so the question I had was, what resources are we providing for our black and brown children, in particular our black and brown boys today, in light of the Stand Your Ground laws, which still stand to this day? And I'm very concerned about making sure that when our black and brown boys are faced with somebody who is a figure of authority, whether it be a police officer, whether it be a school official, whether it be a politician, or in the case of Trayvon, when he's faced with a community watchman, how are they to respond? And where there is confusion, or as President Obama said, where the answer is at least ambiguous, it looks like to me that's where we should discuss tonight, or at least as a part of the discussion, what resources are we providing as adults in our communities for our most valuable resource, which is our black and brown children?
Very good. Very good question. And I think it's important for the discussion that everybody understands, and for us to even just elaborate on it, because you use the word resources. And, again, for those who may be just tuning in for the first time, I did say that PRF, the PRF tables, PRF stands for Possessions, Resources, and Finances. So resources is one-third of what PRF is all about. And I always like to make sure that I have people to understand what our understanding of resources is on the show and in this ministry that God has provided for me. And resources is real simple. We don't have to get technical with it. It's something that can be used to support or to help someone else. And it's also something that can be used to help somebody to deal with a difficult situation. It can be in the form of some type of aid. It can be in the form of some type of assistance. But it's about helping somebody when they need some help. It's about helping somebody when they're in the time of need, even though they may not realize it. And I think for us, so to counter back your question, Brother McWhite, I think it's important for us to really look at and try to maybe define or narrow down what you're talking about. What does resources mean to you? What type of resources out there that people can glean from to say, okay, this is a resource? Because sometimes I think we don't understand as people, and if Brother Feaster was on the show, he'd say, hold on, how are you going to talk about the we? I use it every now and then. But I do, and I get on him a lot. I get on my brother a lot about that we thing. But I really think that sometimes we as people really don't understand how resourceful that we really are and how much we really, really have that can benefit, aid, assist, support, help somebody else in a time of need, and it doesn't have to be a very big, big tragedy like sometimes people think. So can we let me throw that back at you, Brother McWhite. You know, what type of resources do you see out there that we're either utilizing or not utilizing, or that is not even available to us in our black or brown community?
Well, Brother Dunlap, there are a great many of resources, and not all of them come in the forms that you might expect. Resources that were available to our dearly departed Brother Trayvon may not be available to everyone, but I think that we need to at least be aware of the ones that we do have, because sometimes the most prescient resource that we have is the one that's always been there and you just didn't even know it. You can look at the resources that, when you go to the resource section of the library, for example, you don't know what, you only go in there with a question. And you say to the librarian, I have a question. And they say, well, this is the resource desk. Let me help you understand where to go. And effectively, that is all that a resource is. A resource doesn't necessarily solve the problem, but it becomes a tool in your toolbox to help you through a situation. So a resource can be as simple as a part-time volunteerism in a mentoring program. A resource can be as simple as going to the church and the church stepping up and saying, we may not be able to teach you how to wire a house, but we have a pipeline to an apprenticeship program teach you how to be an electrician. A resource can also be learning how to participate in a public speaking event. Why would public speaking be a resource? So that you know how to communicate with authority figures. You know, resources come in many different forms. And so when I think about resources, I think about them in unconventional ways. Typically, we think of resources as we confuse resources with possessions, things that we already have. But I like to think of a resource as being something of, people who are steeped in the church have often thought about faith as being the substance of things not seen and the evidence of things not seen, some things hoped for. And I like to think of resources as being along the same line. Those are things that, much like when you go to the library, and you're looking for a resource, you don't know what is there, but you're trusting that you're going to come away with an answer that you may not have even thought of a question for yet. All you know is that you have a situation that needs a solution, and you go to somebody like a trusted family member, the teacher in your school, the pastor, the diaconate, could be your neighbor down the street. It might even be, in my case, a resource that I learned a life lesson. I'll make this personal. About 20 years ago, I was working in a restaurant, and I was learning the ropes as being a cook. And there was a dishwasher, and that dishwasher, his job was to take whatever pots and pans we had and to clean them. Now, I was being lazy. I'm going to own that. I was being lazy that night, and I asked for him to wash a couple of pots so that I could continue to do my job. I did not recognize the type of day this gentleman had. I did not recognize how worn out he had been and how hard he was working. Least of all, I did not recognize that this man was at least four times my age. So what right did I have to go to him asking him to wash a pot that I just as easily could have washed myself? So all he did was take the pot, he washed it, and then he handed it back to me and didn't say a word. And in that one moment, I learned that respect for elders doesn't just end as soon as you walk out the house. There was a resource for me that's paid off to this day. Sometimes you just find the resource, you don't even know it. So that's one thing I would ask for every person listening tonight to consider, that sometimes a resource doesn't come in a form that you expect, but it's important to learn how to recognize that resource when it presents itself. Brother Dunlap.
Boy, you are dropping the mic and throwing it back at me quick, Brother McWhite. But I'm glad you're doing that. I'm glad you're doing that because I do that to Brother Feaster and Sister D all the time. So I guess I have to take the medicine that I sometimes dose out. But no disagreement, my brother, from anything that you said. And so let me pull out or dissect something that you said earlier about Brother Trayvon. One of the things that I think was kind of key that you mentioned was about the resources that he had. And I think at this point right now is why it's kind of starting to resonate with me, the question that you had, what type of resources are available to our boys, our black and our brown boys in the community, or what resources are lacking. That's basically where we're at tonight, everyone. And so I think about Brother Trayvon. Brother Trayvon lived, was in the gated community. Brother Trayvon, the education that he had was pretty good. He probably had a very good shot at going to college. He had parents, a mother and a father, that was active in his life, right? So he had he had some things, some resources around him, tangible and intangible. I mean, you just can't take education and put it in a box. Those come from experiences and also what's made available to you. So Brother Trayvon had those things. And so for me, I'm kind of like what Jesus said. It's not about the 99, it's about the one. So we don't want to make it seem like in the black and the brown community that there are not resources out there available, because they are. But Brother Dunlap McWhite is not so much concerned about the 99. I'm following my Savior. I'm concerned about the one. So if we go back to my home, Philly, growing up in Philly, and even when I go back home now, gated communities are nowhere around my neighborhood, bro. My neighborhood is still the way it was when I left 20 years ago, or however long it's been. The education of Martin Luther King High School has not increased to where it's one of the better graded schools in the city, which is one reason why I decided to go out of my neighborhood into the northeast section of Philadelphia to go to high school, which that shouldn't be so. So let's deal with all of those who may not have at their disposal the different resources that we believe should be in place. Because if we're not willing to have the conversation about what's not there and seem to turn a blind eye or to thumb our nose at what's already there, we're going to have a whole lot of our black and our brown boys falling through the cracks. And I can say who understands me knows that I don't paint these broad brush strokes across everything. For me, I could talk about my community. The south side of my city needs some work. The reality is the south side of my city doesn't get the same resources that the north side of my city gets. That's a problem. That's a problem. So we have to be willing to say, okay, if our black or brown boys who live on the south side of the city do not have the same type of schools with the same type of resources within them, do not have the same caliber of teachers who care about them, and all of those different things that go into this conversation that we're having tonight, Mac, if we don't say something about it, if we don't do something about it, then my question is, who else is going to do anything about it? You mentioned something about the church, and I'm always going to go there every opportunity that I have. So I'm looking at my community, and I think what I want us to do is to talk about what's not there. What are we seeing that is not there? Because we can never get to solving a problem, or as I like to say, transforming a culture, a society, a neighborhood, an institution. We can never get there unless we identify what are some of the challenges. I don't have to say that they're problems, they're just challenges. Because sometimes we may not have even asked the question. So if you never have asked the question, you may just not even get the answer. Or as you said a few minutes ago, Brother McWhite, you may not know what to ask. But if I see it, I think there's a little bit of responsibility. The onus is a little bit on me to be able to say something about it, especially when I see it, in case there's other folks who do not see it. So let's talk about the church for a minute. I'm not going to say the church overall. I'm going to just say the churches in my community. What are the resources that are lacking for our black and our brown boys? I could talk about my community again. There's a lacking that I see of after school programs that are operated by, supported by the various churches in the community. So if there's a lack of after school programs, daycare centers, where else are they going to go? Where else are they going to go? I think we have a responsibility to be able to support those type of nonprofit organizations, ministries, people that have a desire within our congregations that love children, that are anointed for it, and say, you know what, I would love to operate a daycare. You know, I see that as one of the resources that is lacking in our community. I can tell you, all of our children are, you know, the last one is graduating this year from high school, and the other one's in college, and the other one is growing, doing her thing. So in the big scheme of things, I don't have those little children. But again, the 99 and the 1, just because my children are older, do I not have a concern about the other children that's growing up, that's 5 or 6, that I see in church with their parents on Sunday? Talk to us, Matt.
Well, you know, one of the challenges that we have in America today is we're always so concerned about letting somebody else deal with the issue because we figure that somebody else can do it better, or worse, we just kind of figure that we don't have time to do it, or I don't have the tools in my toolbox to handle this kind of thing. So I'm glad we're talking about how we can make this work in our communities. I think part of the problem that the churches have with providing these resources for our black and brown boys is because we don't have people stepping to the church and saying, this is a skill that I have. And I think a lot of that comes from maybe not even recognizing the skills that we do have. You may have somebody in the congregation who is there right now who is highly skilled as a singer, but they don't seem to understand that they have the ability to lead a choir or to at least become part of the choir and lead in their section. You know, I mean, I remember Brother Tavis Smiley, who has his own talk show on somebody's network, I don't know where, and he said...
Long Talk Radio.
All right. Brother Tavis Smiley one time was talking about how these kids don't know nothing. They don't seem to understand anything. And he was complaining to his mother about it. He said, they don't know their history. They don't know how to handle this. They don't know how to do that. And he was complaining so much, his mother turned and looked at him and said, well, baby, why don't they know? And he was like, yeah, that was his reaction. See, he was like, okay. So the reason they don't know is because nobody's telling them. And it starts with me. So the issue we have here is we need to remember that just, what we don't want to become is, I know the Bible speaks to it specifically about being a lump. I know the word lump is in there, and it talks about, it's one of those allegorical references that the Bible talks about where a person or a member of the church body becomes essentially a fixture within that church. And I don't mean a fixture as in a pillar that you look up to and they lead something. I mean a fixture like, one of the candelabras or the podium or the microphone stand. They become a fixture. They're always there, but they don't do nothing. They just kind of sit there. They come in, they get the word, they hoop and they holler, and they leave. And but they're not really doing anything to be a part of the church community. And let's remember, the definition of church is not the physical building itself. The church are the people within it. So when we talk about why is my church not helping my children, it's not the church building fault. The issue is where are the people within the church who are being these resources for these black and brown boys. I'm reading a book right now that is going to go a long way towards helping us in our journey to raise our children in a way that they will not only survive but thrive. It's a book by Joe Brewster and Michelle Stevenson. You may have seen the thing on PBS shown on their POV presentation, and it was the American Promise Project. It was a lesson that was 12 years in the making. What these highly educated adults did was they had boys, and these boys were going from a public school into a private school with the expectation that the private school, predominantly white, was going to offer their boys a better education. That's an expectation that a lot of people might have. And what they found out, with the full permission of the school, was to videotape over 12 years their progression through that school system. And they were surprised to find out, getting back to the theme, how few resources there were in that school specifically aimed with the black and brown child in mind. And so they wrote a book, a companion book to go along with it, called Promises Kept, Raising Black Boys to Succeed in School and in Life. And I think I just gave everybody yet another resource to take a look at. This is a resource that we can have to learn how to raise, and it starts from the time before conception. So let's remember, when we're trying to raise our black and brown boys with the proper resources, the resources begin before they are even conceived. Living right, eating well, taking care of yourself, taking those iron pills even though you don't want to. You know, ladies and gentlemen out there, you need to eat well. Go see that doctor. There's a resource, your doctor. Don't forget that. Because if you can't take care of yourself, how are you going to help somebody else? Well, even if your mind is so concerned about the 99, you had mentioned that we need to go out after the one. I think I remember that passage in the Bible too, where you know the one sheep had gone away, and he went looking for that one sheep. And they said, "Why would you be so worried about that one sheep?" You know, I said, "Well, is that sheep so unimportant that I shouldn't?" You know, every person is important in the eyes of God. And in my mind, every child, whether he's my child, your child, or anybody else's child, is important too. So here's another resource. The people that are in our community, we tend to get scared to discipline boys in our community because we think they're going to pull a gun on us. We think that their mama's going to be mad and yell at us. We think that some authority figure is going to say, "This man is hassling me, stranger danger." I don't know how we got to that. I really don't know how we got to that. I mean, it used to be a time when we were unafraid to be a village. Now we act as if we have to be stuck up in our hut, and whatever happens in the village is none of our business. And that's very disturbing. So if we're going to be a resource, each and every last one of us a resource, because let's remember, each and every one of us can be a resource for our black and brown boys. If we're going to be that resource that they need, we need to come out of our huts, and we need to rejoin the family circle. We need to get back into our communities, and it starts with you, starts with me, and it continues from there, because people will emulate what they see. Children will not do what we say, but they absolutely will do what they see. And if they see us showing a real interest in mentoring them, in leading them, in bringing them to proper resources in areas where we lack but somebody else excels, they're going to follow willingly because it's the right thing to do. Train up a child in the way so that they might not depart. No, so that's my perspective on that, other than that.
So just to recap for those who may just be joining us, a couple of the challenges, as I've heard you say, are the some of what you said, several things of what you said were mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to lump everything together, but when I heard you say, I'll let somebody else do it, that's a mindset. I don't have the
right.
time to do it. That's a mindset. I'm not equipped
right.
to do it. That's a mindset. Don't have the communal mindset. That's a mindset. You know, and when you talk about they don't offer or recognize, they don't offer their skills or they don't recognize the skills that they actually have. I thought about that. I said, well, you know what, that's maybe not necessarily a mindset. So for me, it may be a reality as well as a perception. So for me, mm-hmm. one of the challenges that I see is sometimes in our, and I got to say it, I hate to say it, but I got to say it, in some of the black churches in my community, I'll just say it like that, in my community, there is a lack of recognizing the spiritual gifts that people have. And so since
mm-hmm.
we don't talk about, not we, because I'm not even in that bubble, since some of our black churches are not talking about spiritual gifts, since some of our mm-hmm. black churches are not nurturing people to understand and seek God for what their spiritual gifts are so that they can be a resource in the kingdom. And if you're a resource in the kingdom, Matt, you're a resource in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be a resource in the kingdom inside of the church and not outside the community. It just doesn't happen like that. Jesus said, be witnesses unto me in Judea, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and all the uttermost parts of the earth. He ain't say just stay there in Jerusalem. He gave other places, meaning you had to spread out, and that's
right.
just what they did. So for me, what I'm seeing, again, as a challenge is some of it is what we're not in our churches, not offering to people to be able to recognize that God has called every last one of us to do something in life. And it doesn't mean, let me go here. It doesn't mean that you're going to do this for the rest of your life, Pastor.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that you're going to for the rest of your life, Deacon.
Mm.
And I can speak from the Baptist church perspective. The two offices of the Black Baptist Church, we know, you and I know, are the offices of a pastor and the office of a deacon. And somehow, there seems to be this mindset that seems like it's 455 years old,
mm-hmm.
that if you're not the pastor, if you're not a deacon on the deacon board, then somehow there's really not too much other room for you to do certain things. So if that is the mindset, if that's the challenge, it's up to us to be able to identify it. I'm talking about it, and I do talk about it. Maybe that's why I'm not in certain positions today, but it's okay. Because for those people, like you said, Brother McWhite, that don't offer, if somebody joins your church where you're at today, it shouldn't take 3 or 4 years for them to feel comfortable to be able to say, I know how to do this,
mm-hmm.
or I know how to do that, and I really would like to do this or do that here. Because if our young black boys do not see me operating within the church, then what in the world is going to make anybody believe that they're going to have a desire to work inside of the church?
Well, let me give you a little bit of good news, Brother Dunlap. Not every black church, quote unquote black church, is falling down on the job. And I know that it's easy to feel that way because it's personal for us. When we see our church not doing as well as we'd like them to, we tend to become, you know, disappointed, disgusted, frustrated, and then that makes us pull back even further. But let me give you one very good example. When we moved into a new church in Southwest Virginia, they had the new membership class. And in that church in Southwest Virginia, one of the pre-discipleship class that we took, in the seventh session, it was understanding your role within that church. And it literally asked, what are your spiritual gifts? Teaching, exhortation, giving, administration, mercy, apostleship, evangelism, pastor teaching, wisdom, knowledge and faith, healing, miracles, distinguishing spirits, or to our educated ones, divining, tongue, interpretation of tongues. And then it asked them just real basic questions. Do you enjoy public speaking? I have been able to make effective and efficient plans for accomplishing the goals of a group. And then you answer these questions, and when it's all said and done, you fill it in under the stir up the gifts section. And where you rank the highest, you may be surprised to find out that you actually have some real skills that you did not even know you had. So I think that if more churches were to do something like this with each of their new members, we're more likely to find some of these missing resources within our churches and say, we have a need for you because in our community we're lacking here. And we find, and you have discovered through this process that you have this particular gift. And we'd like to help you develop that. So I think that if more churches did that, we could see some real change within our churches and by extension within our communities. So
Man, let me tell you, I'm listening to you, and you talked about a new member class. And again, you know, we're really, tonight, for those who may just be joining, we're really dealing with the question of what are the resources that that we have or conversely lack in the community where our black and our brown boys can go. So you mentioned, Brother White, a new membership class. And everybody who may have just come in on the tail end, I did say that I don't paint a broad brush stroke across everything. So when I talk about black church, I'm talking about in my community. That's it.
Yep.
Because that's what I know. I can talk about what's going on in my community because I see it and I live it. I see it and I live it. And I see what else is going on in the community because of certain things that maybe the church is not involved in. So when you talked about the new membership class, my spirit also just said, talking about resources, how many churches actually have a new membership class that is focused on the youth? See, this thing, Brother McWhite, the way God has wired me and given me or wired me or given me this ministry and the other venues that he's provided to me, it's about transformation.
Yeah.
That is some transformative thinking for your tail, because I don't know any church in this community. Most of them don't even have new membership classes, let alone a new membership class for youth. Because how else are you going to get an understanding of who the youth are? It doesn't come just from having Sunday school class with the youth. It just doesn't come from having a Wednesday night Bible study with the youth. It comes from some real deal interaction where you can really find out about who that young person is. Don't you know it takes young, sometimes it takes young folk longer to open up than it does adults?
Of course. Especially if we taught them not to trust.
Especially you know, when they're watching the news that they see the type of things that has transpired down in Sanford, Florida. Especially when they hear grown-ups talking about the injustices in the system. Especially when they see us not marching and protesting and speaking up for our rights and doing all those things in our own, okay, let me just say, in my own community. As with so much vigor, with the same type of vigor that was expressed for what happened down in Sanford, Florida, 6 hours away. So when the verdict came out about Brother Trayvon, not Trayvon, but George Zimmerman, we had two people that had died that week in my own community. Where's the outrage? And we got to be honest about things. We can't have the same. We can't take a blind eye when we as black people or African Americans, whatever you want to call yourself, don't have that same type of vigor and don't have that same outcry for justice when we do it to one of our own. Our young black and brown boys see that. And I don't care what you tell, what you want to tell me, not you, Mac, but those who are listening, from my line of work, I see what I see, so I know how it affects young folk. Because the folk that come to the place where I work are grown folks who got caught up in the system. And they have mindset because of certain things, you know?
Well, as you, yeah, I do. I mean, as you know, they have this fantastic book, and I'm something of a bookworm, so you forgive me that for that, please. But when it comes to expanding my knowledge, I tend to go straight to the book to learn a little bit more. Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow goes directly to what you're talking about. In her book, she explains in a very academic way specifically what is happening in our communities today to decimate our resources, to see to it that the resources that we should have in our communities simply are not there because they are incarcerated, because they are sidelined, because they are disenfranchised, because they are gerrymandered away from the very communities where they can be most effective. The most dangerous thing that we've seen done in our political arena really has nothing to do with ideology. It has everything to do with voting districts, and many people are only just now waking up to that. Whenever you look around and say, why are we having so many problems getting a simple weapons ban passed, or even just, if not a weapons ban, even if you don't want to go that far, let's say that your social and moral compass does not go quite that far to the left. Let's just say that you want to make sure that every person who has a gun is a responsible gun owner, and that person needs to have a background check. We couldn't even have an honest discussion about that in America because of gerrymandering. What is gerrymandering? Gerrymandering is when you take voting districts and you carve them up into very strange and illustrious and imaginative districts in order to protect your seat of power. And what does that mean? Well, it means you keep your job. At what cost? It means that you no longer hear from people who are your detractors. You no longer hear the voice of people who live right across the street from you and should be considered part of your community but are not, because the voting district line bifurcates that street. What happens? Well, you lose things like state statesmen in the political sphere who should be a resource in our communities, doesn't have to listen to you because you're not in his district or her district. Therefore, that resource is eliminated from us. That means that if you are from the far left and you're living in a far right community, it's very likely that you're either going to be taken out of the district by gerrymandering, or you're simply going to be ignored because the district has been written in such a way that your voice doesn't really matter. So it's a two-way street when it comes to resources. You have the people who are in the community that want to be a resource for our kids. We go to our elected officials and say we want to increase our presence in our community and we need your help to do it. But if you're not in a cosmopolitan district where you have a true mix as opposed to a homogenous voting district, you're less likely to be heard. And that's why you get some politicians from both sides of the aisle who are unwilling to listen to reason, unwilling to do the right thing, as Brother Spike Lee once said. You have a real problem with seeing the community step up because the leaders that we keep sending out are listening to only one side of the echo chamber. You know, so part of the problem is us just not being able to get the ear of who we hope would be our resource. And then when that resource goes out and becomes our mouthpiece, they're only speaking for one half of it, ignoring the other half. And that's, there's a tragedy there. So I'd like to see that change, you know, because once we see, let's make it even more personal back in the church. Within the church, if the pastor is only listening to the diaconate and not to the trustees, how long do you think that church will survive? If you have the choir, the music minister only listening to the one choir and not to the others, how long do you think that that music minister is going to be speaking to the spiritual body? They're only listening to one side. Maybe they're the director of the senior chorus, the voices of experience, but he won't listen to the youth choir because are they young? They don't know anything. But he's not going to teach them songs that they would want to sing, so they end up just singing out the hymnal, and the choir gets smaller and smaller. He may have just made them miss their blessing. He may have just removed himself as a viable resource of teaching and learning how to public speak. I think I mentioned a while ago that public speaking is an important skill that a person may have to teach as a resource to the young children within the church. One way to learn how to speak publicly is in the choir. And if you remove that child from somebody who teaches that child to use their voice because they're only listening to the older members of the church and not to the youth, well, that child just missed his blessing. And I'd hope to think that nobody would want a child to miss their blessing. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. But, I mean, it can be just that simple. It could be as simple as you see a child going into the local Quickie Mart, and you see that child slip a candy bar into their pocket. You could teach that child a lesson by when they go past the counter, you could call them out and say, young man, I saw that candy bar in your hand. I'm going to pay for it for you. How's that sound? Their store owner would be astonished. The child would be embarrassed, but he would have learned something. You know, you can be a resource without direct confrontation.
Yeah.
And not even that child would learn more in that interaction than they would if you had boxed their ears and said, I'm going to call the cops on you and put you into the system. And hope that the system is going to take care of them and say, it's no longer my problem. I don't have to worry about it. I'm going to let somebody else do it.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So that's I'm gonna step off the soapbox for a second here, Brother Matt.
I'm enjoying this, Brother White, because we have to be willing. We have to be willing in my community and your community, which for everybody listening, we're only representing two communities. We're not representing the United States of America. I'm not representing the state of Pennsylvania. I'm representing my community where I live, and I know what's going on in my community. Something that time is going by so fast. It's been almost an hour, and it's just flowing like it's supposed to, bro. One of the things that came to mind as you were talking was about role models, and I was thinking about how to frame it, but I can't just quite put my finger on it. But you were talking about those people in the community, so that took me to this notion of role models, and I think one of the challenges with role models. Again, dealing with the central question, you know, what are the resources we have or conversely lack of a community where our black or our brown boys can go?
Mm-hmm.
One thing about role models is not knowing where they are and not knowing who they are. I'm going to have to. And I know you said black or brown boys, and all I have is girls, but I'm going to do what I'm going to suggest others would do. As a parent, I think it's vital, based upon what we just are talking about, Brother McWhite, that I as a parent know who my child looks up to. Because if I'm trying to teach my child X, but they look up to this other person who does Y and Z and 1, 2, 3, that means that there's a struggle, there's a conflict there. Because the way that I may be teaching my child versus the way somebody else may be teaching my child may not be as effective as that other person that's outside of my home. So I think for us, it is very, very critical that we have an understanding, who does my child look up to? And I'm not looking, and it doesn't have to be me as the father, right? It doesn't have to be, you know? It doesn't have to be. Be good. I would love it. It'd do something for my ego. But in the big scheme of things, you know, if my child, okay, daughter wants to be an obstetrician, I have no problem with her having a role model of somebody who is in the medical field, right? Because if that person wrote some books, that is something that's going to capture their attention. That is something that they can follow that I can't do for her. I can teach her about criminal justice. I can teach her about ministry. But there's some things I just can't teach her, that it's room for role models in their lives. So when I think about that, or what you were saying, role models, who they are, and where they are important. If my child's role model, or if our black or brown boys in my community, if the role models are some cats on TV that they never have an opportunity to feel, touch, or speak to personally, I think there's something wrong with that picture, because they're not going to get the attention that they need that you should be getting from a role model.
Right.
And so that takes me to another one of the challenges. And I think for me, it's all wrapped up in one. You know, role models, who they are, where they are. Here's a challenge for me regarding what we're talking about tonight. A lack of youth ministers.
Mm.
Every day I get job advertisements, every day, through email, for ministerial and pastoral positions all over the country. Every day. And the number one position that needs to be filled by far is youth ministers, over lead pastors, over senior pastors, over worship leaders. It's youth ministers. So I know for a fact, not just in my community, but by the emails that I'm getting, that there is a very big need, large need, for youth ministers. And I can't say that they are youth ministers in a black church, a white church, or whatever. I don't know. But overall, youth ministers. So let's take it. Let's say that it is not, let's say the youth minister positions that I see coming up all the time are not for the African-American church, not for the black church in my community. Then that speaks to another challenge, right?
All right.
Because we have to invest in our young boys. It's just no way, shape, or form, no ifs, ands, buts, or about it. And you know why that's crucial for me? Because I got three young ladies.
Right.
So I want people to invest time and energy into our black and our brown boys. I want us to be able to put more resources inside of our community, inside of the church, outside of the church, to be able to help these young boys grow, because they're dealing with a lot of stuff, Brother McWhite, that you and I didn't have to deal with growing up.
Very true.
You talked about community. So as you talked about community, there's a reason why there's a lack of that communal aspect that we have in some of the communities that I know about, because technology prevents some of that interaction that we used to have. So a lot of my ministerial friends, and pastor friends, we want our young folk to come to church. Dude, get over it. We may need to do something with some technology. We may need to do something outside of the church, because the same thing that worked 20 years ago just doesn't work today in every setting. So I talk about the challenge because it's there, the lack of youth ministers. And the other challenge is this, bro. The other challenge is the lack of funds for our youth ministries. And we have a caller with 5087. I'm going to come to you in a minute after I say this last point, so please be patient with me. I am tired of seeing us having, I'm going to say us, I'm talking about my community. I'm tired of seeing our young folk out there washing cars, selling hot dogs, doing fish fries to raise money in the church to do youth ministry activities because we don't do that for the pastor's salary. So a resource that we need for our young black and brown boys is we need to invest in youth ministry. We need to create positions inside of the church so it's not just the pastor, no S, and the deacons. Because if we don't do that, what's going to make them come? What's going to draw them? I'm sorry. Some of the messages that I speak just don't relate to young folks, bro. It just doesn't. And me throwing in the name 50 Cent every now and then, me throwing in the Tyler Perry joke every now and then, ain't going to grab their attention. I'm done. Caller with the last 4-5-0-8-7, welcome to the PIF table.
Good evening. I just have one interjection, and as I've been listening, and these things have perplexed me. Why is it that we are so relaxed to allow the Caucasian male to mentor our black brown males? And when I say that, basically all of the coaches on our football teams or basketball teams, more so football or white Caucasians. Back in the day, my dad had a sandlot ball. They had he had his own baseball team, and so I'm used to seeing the black male lead out the black male, but it seems that in this 21st century, that role has switched to the Caucasian brother. And I mean, you know, maybe they have good expectations, but I think we're a little bit too relaxed in that area. Can somebody just speak to that? I know you're at the end of the show, but I just see that and it's bothering me.
Mac, you want to take it? I got something to say, but go ahead. I'll yield the floor to you, my brother.
I think that nature abhors a vacuum. And I think that it's important that we see our own, and I'll say it this way, I think it's important that we see our own people leading our own people. But if somebody in who is one of our own people will not step to the plate, nature abhors a vacuum. And I'm disappointed when I don't see one of our own step up to lead our own. But I am at the same time glad to see that at least somebody is, because there's a need there that somebody recognized. And if it happens to be a Native American, an Asian adult, as long as they've passed their background check and they have the true interest of my child at heart, and they are held accountable for everywhere they lead my child. And believe me, I will have, you know, I will be in communication, which is key, whether they're black or not. Don't matter to me. I want to make sure that they know that I'm looking at them. I'm watching them. And nobody gets away with anything, regardless of their color. They don't get a pass from me. But I digress. My important statement is I'm just glad that somebody is willing to say, I'm going to be a resource for your child, for my child. And I'm going to be held accountable for my actions. So while I'm disappointed on one hand that somebody who looks like my child is not leading, I'm at least pleased that somebody did step up to that, to be that leader. But then that.
Very interesting perspective, Mac. And I'm glad you have that interesting perspective, because you have a young boy. For me, again, I have nothing but girls. So here's what I'm seeing from the outside looking in, right? I'm seeing that there is a lack of fighting. The caller sister, you talked about us being relaxed. I see us not, and it's not an either or, I think it's a both and. I see us not fighting for the equal rights and the equal resources for our kids. So, for example, on the south side of my city, we have a park that is nowhere close to the park towards the northern end of the city. they invest more money, more time, and more energy to the park at the north end of the city versus the south side. And just so you understand, the south side in most cities in America are with the lower poverty level of individuals that live there. Doesn't mean they're not smarter, doesn't mean they're not brighter, doesn't mean they have a better work ethic, but that's just the more poverty-stricken areas of a city are on the south side of most cities in America. That's a fact. So now, if in my city we have a park on the south side of town, doesn't get the resources, doesn't get the money to be put into it, doesn't have the lighting, then where do you want your child to go? You want your child to be safe. You want your child to be able to, not just your child to be safe, but you want the other people to be safe as well. So when they don't get that, here's what I see. What I see is, you know what? I'm going to send Nate Jr. to the northern end of town to play in the athletic association in the northern end of town because they have better equipment. They take care of them better. That's the perception. I can't say I agree with it, and I don't agree with it, but I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to the Caucasians, they have more access to our young boys because, again, we're talking about economics here. The structure, the system, and I'm sure Sister Alexander probably has something about this in her book, or if not, she's spoken on it before. The system is not going to allow me just to be a coach on the north side of town. I live in the south, segregated. That's bottom line. We've made some strides, but we still have a lot of segregation and racism that still flows through where I live. So who are the figures? The people who are connected with one another. So I may not ever get into that circle, even though I'm a good coach. So now I'm forced to be on the south side of town. Because I don't
get a member of the Good Old Boys Network.
Right. I'm not in that. I'm not in that. So it's up to us. If we see that the city is not providing the resources equally, we're talking about social justice about equal distribution. If we see that that's not happening, and we continue to send our young boys up to the south, to the north side of town, we continue to send them over there to play in these sports because we want them to get playing time. We don't want that energy to go to waste. We don't want them, you know, we know where the scouts, ain't no scouts coming to the south side of Phoenix City. It ain't happening. They going to the north side.
Nice.
They going to where downtown is. So,
and you know, that's really tragic that that happens. That's so tragic because that's a reverse white flight.
Yeah.
You know, they said. Go ahead, Redonna. I'm sorry.
So if we're not willing in this community to stand up for it, if we're not willing to say, you know what, I'm not going to support anything, I'll call for a boycott in a minute if people listen, especially if I really feel strong about some injustices that's happening. Let me tell you something about boycotts. They worked in the past. They'll work in the future. They'll work today.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're going to come put some stuff on the south side so that we can have some of the same things that's going on the north side. Economics, social justice, this is where you get stuff done. If you stop putting your dollars into certain places, people will listen.
Mm-hmm.
People will listen because now it affects their households. Now it affects their little Susie Q or little Johnny who no longer may not have that little job, their little first job, because the restaurant had to close down because not enough people are supporting it. So I see it as, you know, my sister, if you had anything else that you want to say, please say it. I see it as we have to make some decisions about what it is that we actually want. Because if we don't fight for a lot of things, we're not going to get it. And the fight that we fail to do today is a knockout that's going to happen to our youth later on down the road.
Sure. Wow. I mean that you had a lot of important things to say there. I mean it's beautiful. You know, I think that a lot of times, as I said before, we don't see these things happening in the communities that need it the most because there is a lack of political will, and we have that lack of political will to get those resources and argue for those funds in our communities because of gerrymandering. But let's not forget, he who has the money is very jealous about keeping it. I mean, let's not forget, the reason one of our greatest, if not the greatest, I would argue that he is the greatest, community leader, grassroots and national, that America ever birthed was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Do not forget the Jr. He always said, make sure you call me Jr. My father was Dr. Martin Luther King. You know, he was killed not because he fought for civil rights. He was killed because he was about to speak truth to power in a way that really mattered. He was about to talk about finances. He was about to start talking about fiscal equality in the community. He was starting the conversation by talking about how the black men in our communities, which was a great resource, was being killed on the front lines in Vietnam, which was having a strong detrimental economic impact in the black community. We were losing our resources hand over fist. And he was killed because he was about to start talking about that. He was killed because he stood up against the Vietnam War, and it was a very unpopular thing to do at the time. Of course, he was proven to be correct in the long run, but at the time, didn't see it. He was a true leader. And because he was speaking to what we're talking about tonight, resources, you know, I think that there's a lesson that we need we can ponder on our own and come to our own conclusions on. But I think as long as we are unafraid to speak out and say our resources are not to be taken for granted, I think that is where we will see the change come from our individual communities, and it'll come from a place that we probably won't even realize that it was again. Like I said before, when you have in the church, when I took that test, I did not realize that I had the spiritual gifts that showed up in that test. I just didn't realize that about myself. I figured it might be, but I was surprised to see the result. And I think that if we all stand to be accounted for, I think there's something in the word about that as well, about stand up to be accounted. When you count your blessings and look at your resources that you have within yourself, you may be surprised to find out that you can be a better resource in one area than you ever thought that you could be. I've done that.
Well, Mac, I thank you for just sitting down at the table with us and just having this conversation that I'm hoping and praying that everything that was said, from my caller, myself, you, somebody will take this and say, you know what, this is one day away from the end of Black History Month, but it's the start of a new day of Black history, because our youth, our black and our brown young men, and I can say young women as well, are very, very important and crucial to society as we have never seen it before. Because our young black and our brown boys and girls are doing things that we as the old folks just are not doing and are able to get into places that we as the old folks just can't get into. You know, ask my daughter, I'm old. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it is.
No, I don't know anything about being old, Brother Lev.
Yeah, you have the gray inside of your hair. I just got a couple of hairs all over, you know. But I thank you for, again, just for being with us. I thank everybody who's out there listening. I pray that something that has been said is going to spark you to make some different decisions or make some new decisions or start praying to God, what is it that I can do? You heard us talk about the challenges, and you heard us offer some practical resources, places where you can start and say, you know what, these are some things that I can do. You know what, I never thought about it. Never thought about a new membership class for the youth in my church. Maybe that's why some of them don't want to come because they're not connected. Their spiritual gift inventory. You know, that's important. We got to find out what it is that God wants us to do. And it doesn't come to everybody. You know, I can't tell you when I found out about some of the spiritual gifts that God has given me, but it came through a process, I'm sure. But if we did what you presented, Brother McWhite, that was presented from your church back in Virginia, then maybe some people would have learned that or God would have revealed that to them earlier than when they happened to find out 10 or 15 years down the road. You know, in 1 Peter 4, 7 through 11 says, "All the end of all things is near. Be alert, be sober-minded, so that you may pray. But above all, love each other deeply, because love covers a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling." But here's the key. Each of us, or each of you, should use whatever gifts you have received, meaning it has to come from God, received to serve others as faithful steward of God's grace in various forms. If anyone speaks, let him do what he does when he speaks the words, the very words of God. If anybody serves, he should use the strength that God provides for him to serve, so that in all things God may be praised through Christ Jesus. And so to him be the glory and the power forever and ever. That's what we should be striving for. Let us find out what our spiritual gifts is. So in respect to our young black boys, we need to be trying to help them find what is their purpose in life. It ain't about everybody going to college. Didn't work out for a lot of folk. Everybody's not designed to go to community college. Didn't work out for a lot of young people. So they don't have to find that out when they become 18. There's a whole bunch of – my daughter's wanted to be an obstetrician for like the last 7 years. She didn't get that from me. I don't know where she got that from. But that's what she's been wanting to do, and she's on her way to that. So somehow there's something that connected her. And I just want us to just trust God enough that he can place the applicable resources within your grasp. And if you are that person out there that is supposed to be that resource, do what God is asking you to do. And if it's a little bit tough, ask him to give you the strength so that you can do it, so they glorify our Father which is in heaven. So with that, my brothers and my sisters, we love you. McWhite, I appreciate you, my brother. Hope to get you back on the show again real, real soon. And join us, everybody, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the POS table. I'm Brother Dunlap. Have a wonderful, wonderful night. God bless you.